Happy Thursday, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul Dottino, John Schmelk with you. The phone number, if you want to give us a call and talk about some NFL football, the New York Giants, or anything else on your mind, 201-939-4513 on Twitter. It's hashtag Giants Chat if you want to get involved in the conversation that way. And obviously, we're still about 1 week since the start of the NFL draft, so a lot of conversation still about that. We'll be joined by Dan Shanka, former NFL scout, and one of the scouts over at OurLads.com in a couple of minutes. And then tomorrow we'll have Charles Davis joining Jeff Fiegels and I in Big Blue Kickoff Live. And the good thing about guys like Dan and Charles, Paul, is that before the draft, you talk about the guys that study the college game. They're experts on the college players.
Right.
Both Dan and Charles looked at the college players, but they also have a really advanced understanding of the NFL. So we could talk more now about how these players can fit with the teams that they're on with the Giants and across the league, which is really where it starts getting interesting.
Well, what you're talking about is more of their projections
as
opposed to their grades. And I think, you know, a lot of times, folks, you know, in retrospect, when we look at a player after he got to the NFL, we say like, okay, boy, he had this, this, and that, but the projection didn't quite work. And that's why these projection-type guys like Shanka are really, really valuable for us.
Because we know what these guys can do. But so much in the NFL, and you know this based on how even NFL free agents can go from being really good players to not being very good players, changing teams, is based on their skill set, but also, more importantly, does that skill set fill the system and the role they're being asked to fulfill with their new team? So that's where the tricky part to me really comes in with a lot of these college players. You have to figure out how their physical ability can fit into what you do in the NFL. And as we spoke about the last few months, those can be two very different things now with the way the college game is being played.
Well, I think it's no more obvious than when you look at what the Giants did at tight end by taking Evan Engram. This is a guy who clearly fits their mode or their method or their scheme, if you will, perfectly. Speed wide receiver who's going to get downfield and open things up. You know what? O.J. Howard, as great of an all-around prospect as he is, he would not have been the deep downfield speed threat that Evan Engram is. And so given what the Giants want him to do and what they're projecting him to do, Engram is the right pick for them. Same thing with Njoku. Njoku, not nearly the speed threat downfield. And so that's the problem, you know, when we go into the draft and we're sitting here talking, John, and we're talking to the fans, we're talking about guys who we think have certain values and skill sets. We're talking about holes on teams that we think they want to fill. And we're talking about where we think guys may be able to go. What we're not doing as much, and it's hard to do because so much is going on, we're not doing as much projection into how the guy will fit in retrospect after he's picked. And it was only after Engram was picked that I started to warm up to the idea that, oh, you know what? The Giants got a square peg to fit the square hole. And that's where we are.
And we'll talk about that and more with Dan Shanka in a couple of seconds. If you want to listen to the interview and watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or your Giants mobile app, and you can check the rest of the show out there, including this upcoming interview. And now we're joined by Dan Shanka from OurLads.com, former NFL scout. You got Dan, John Schmelk, Paul Dottino here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Good afternoon. I'm sure you've been able to take a bit of a deep breath this week with the draft in the books.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was an exciting weekend in Philadelphia, and it was really, I mean, you know, you could point to a lot of teams saying they went for their targets maybe instead of the best player a lot of times, but no, it was exciting. Hey, tons of obviously Giant fans and down there and everything, and of course the Eagles, they don't get a chance to cheer about many Super Bowls or anything, but like the Giants do, but they were out there in force and had a great, just, you know, they were great hosts, Mr. Lurie and everybody to do with Philadelphia. So, but anyway, hey, the Giants is what we're talking about, and did some good things.
Absolutely, Dan, and let's get right into it. Before you came on, we were talking about how fit is so important, and given that you've scouted these college players and you know the NFL so well, we figure you're the perfect guy to talk about how these players will fit on their NFL teams. And something I wrote on Giants.com that'll come up, I think, today or tomorrow, Evan Engram is basically unlike any player the Giants have ever had on their roster in terms of his skill set, body makeup, and abilities to play tight end. How do you envision Ben McAdoo utilizing him in the Giants offense, in that West Coast system, and how often and where do you think he's going to line up, and what percentage of the snaps he's going to play? Just kind of give me your rundown on how you think the Giants will utilize Ingram's skill set in the larger picture of their offense.
Well, you know, obviously, like you, I heard a little bit of the preview coming in, and Ingram is different than any other tight end in this draft. I mean, he's actually a big wide receiver, kind of a slot guy, and that's where he did most of his damage at Ole Miss, in the slot. And, you know, he went down the seam, and he just outruns it. You know, you're in cover, too. You're in deep trouble with him because your safety's better turn and run, you know what I mean? Because here he comes. And then he'll plant and come back for the ball. So, you know, he is a unique – now, he's a faster Jordan Reed from the Redskins. But I think he'll be utilized a lot like that where, you know, in the slot, he'll line up at wing. He'll get moved. And of course, when you're running the slant patterns, which is the, key route in the West Coast offense, I mean, he's just a big target there when you're running a slant. And of course, you know, with the receivers, they're already there. I think what's going to happen is he's going to be open or certainly, Beckham's going to draw the double coverage, but then Marshall, he's probably single coverage as big as he is. And then you got Ingram, you know, in that slot, and then Shepard, wherever they put him. And hey, their base, Giants base offense may be four wide, you know, so, but they do like to run the ball, as you guys know. So, but no, I think Ingram is going to be that utility guy that's going to move all over the offense, a line in a multitude of places.
Now, Dan, you know, you and I both had said we had preferred the Giants to draft David Njoku. We thought that was a good fit for them going into the draft. But as John and I said before we brought you on, sometimes you have to understand in retrospect, when the team picks a certain guy because of a certain skill set, it better fits what it is that they plan to do. Would you not agree, at least at this point, Ingram's skill set, specifically his speed as that big receiver, probably fits this McAdoo 2011 Packers style, and I've equated him to JerMichael Finley, although a little shorter but certainly faster. I think in retrospect, he's probably a better fit for what they want to do than either Howard or Njoku are, and that's not to say those other two guys aren't better players, because I think their skill sets are a little different. Howard, the best all-around guy, but would you agree with this, or am I just smoking the Kool-Aid here, drinking the Kool-Aid?
No. Right. No, I think that's very valid, and that's what you want to get is a guy that fits what you want to do. And too many times teams draft guys that don't fit their scheme, and it not only hurts the team but hurts the player's productivity. And so Ingram is a guy, like you said, they've never had that before with the Giants, and he's going to be a guy that he's not your classic tight to the offensive line tight end, more of a flex kind of guy. And he certainly is one of the fastest guys at that size. So you can do a lot of things. And even, say for now, Ingram did drop a few balls. Let's not forget that. But even so, you got to respect his speed, and you're going to get back there. And, if he runs down the seam, look who you got coming underneath. You got big target with Marshall, or you got Beckham, who he gets it underneath, and it's a home run. So, because he can beat that first guy. So I think there's so many things that, and the West Coast guys, they like to, they look at everybody else, what they do and things in their scheme. And I'm sure that, McAdoo's been looking at Gruden down at Washington, see what kind of things that they've done with Reed. And, those West Coast guys, they just kind of look and pick up each other's things. And I think that, that's going to really help Ingram a lot. So, now, no question, he's a guy that's a weapon. And, we like Howard. And now Njoku is almost, I mean, he's not too far behind Ingram in running. Now, he didn't run a super combine. I think he was 4.6 or
right,
something. But when I talked to the Miami coaches, this is before the combine stuff. But they said, hey, Dan, this kid's going to run 4.49, 4.48, somewhere in there. Well, he wasn't quite that close, but you know the kid can run. He's a good athlete. But nevertheless, it's a good fit. Evan Engram going to the Giants.
If I were to say to you there's still one thing missing on this offense, and my opinion is it's the thumper, the power back, would you agree with that, or do you think they've got enough now, specifically in the passing game, that they don't need to add a thumper? They drafted Gallman to add to the running back core. Is that enough to give the Giants a full-fledged look here, or are they still short a piece like I think they are?
Well, you'd like to have a closer, and that's usually those big guys that, hey, get that, 3.4 yards a carry late, and boom, you give it to him again, 3.4 yards. Give it to him again, 3.4 yards. Now first down, okay, keep the chains moving. So you'd like to have a pounder in there with the other backs, because I really like the Giant backs and everything. And Gallman, he's a slasher, and which is, we really like him, a guy that can, when he hits those seams in there, he knows he can feel where the other the defense is coming from, and he drops that shoulder and can run through them. It'd be great to have a guy that can close out the game for you. And, Jerry Reese and McAdoo, they think maybe Gallman and some of the other guys can be closers. But, it'd be nice to have a big hammer in there that, like I said, you just control the game late when you're ahead. Hey, just shut it out.
Final question for me, Dan, on Engram before we move on to some of the other players. And I guess this is more of a coaching decision and a coaching question, but as a scout, I'm curious on your take. Given Brandon Marshall's age, do you think the Giants are going to use Evan Engram's presence here to maybe limit his snaps a little bit this year so he's not out there for 85-95% of the snaps, where they'll put Ellison at tight end, they'll use Engram almost as a wide receiver with Shepard and Odell Beckham Jr. out there? Or do you think that at his age, Marshall can still handle playing that super heavy snap load?
Well, I think that, all things are in play. And Marshall is a big target, but now he has this year of drops too. So,
yep.
I mean, if he gets the cold streak coming, I think you can see Engram maybe making a move. Just in regards to, he's probably going to have to learn all the positions anyway.
Right.
So as a rotate
they all do.
Guy, and, yeah, you can't substitute speed. I mean,
no.
here's a guy that Engram can fly. So like I said, hey, if you tied his arms to his side and you're still going to have him probably double covered if he's out there as a wide guy, over the top of the safety and they have the corner up there, even, like I said, even if his arms are tied to his side. So, I think that those guys have got to be multiple alignment receivers in that scheme. So, yeah, I could see that, age and time catches everybody, and Marshall's no exception.
All right, let's talk about Tomlinson for a second, because Dalvin's going to line up next to Big Snacks there in the heart of the Giants' rushing defense. And we have said now for days, Dan, that we think he is going to be a pretty good filler for what Jonathan Hankins provided. How do you see him meshing with Snacks?
Well, I mean, I don't recall if I mentioned this when we visited last time, but Tomlinson is one of my favorite players in this draft. I mean, every time I studied Alabama, which I studied, conservatively, I don't want to sound like Ron Jaworski and some of those guys that, they looked at everything in the world, but I've looked at least over the last 2 years, probably 14 to 15 tapes on these guys. And Tomlinson, or as I call him, 54, was always there. You know what I mean? He was always in the pot. He was forcing the action to Jonathan Allen, who, again, was one of my other favorite players, along with Ryan Anderson. Nobody talked about Tomlinson hardly at all. And like I said, he was our second-rated, I believe, defensive tackle. And because he does everything right, and he's a technique guy, he's a team guy, he's powerful inside. You just don't move this guy off the ball. I mean, if he anchors down, boy, it's all over. I mean, he's going to stuff that spot right now. So I was happy. I mean, to me, he's a Giant. I mean, that's what he is. I mean, he's what the Giants always preached on defense there, and he's that kind of guy, very physical, former wrestler. Love his skill set and his hustle, and I mean, he just he can, if he has to slant and angle, he can do that. But you know, I work with Steve Spagnuolo at Philadelphia, and I've seen Steve over the years, and these are the kind of guys that he likes. Mm-hmm. And so, no, I tell you, I'm waving the flag for Dalvin Tomlinson. He's, like I said, one of my, and I, you know, I like those fat guys. I mean, I've always been a guy like, I like those defensive linemen. You know, I just always have. And he was one of my favorites this year. And he's going to make the Giant fans happy, because, you know what, he's not going to do something stupid and say go up and leave a gap open or something. He's going to close down those gaps, and because he's a very smart and very instinctive football player.
Dan, in the passing game, you know, we figure on first and second down our running situations, he'll be in that three technique next to snacks. Do you think he can generate some pass rush from that position? And as the second part of the question, do you think he's a good fit on third down passing situations to put him at nose tackle, you know, between that center and guard, and let him try to get generate some push and push the pocket from the middle to maybe make things a little bit easier on Vernon and JPP?
Yeah, no, he can. That's exactly what he can do. I mean, if he's lined up in the nickel, say at nose, I mean, he can push the pocket and slide up. And then I think, you know, I'll really be surprised if he doesn't get, some very productive sacks inside, because most teams will be doubling snacks. You know what I mean? And so I'm telling you what, this guy's not easy to single block. So he's going to free himself up, and he's going to put pressure inside and make those negative yardage tackles, because the guy next to him is absorbing a lot of the block. So I think that, he can play that nose. And like I said, hey, the kid, he never quits. I mean, he just keeps coming now. And he's powerful. He pushes the pocket. He can slide off. He can get off. I tell you what, he's got very strong hands. Okay, good extension with his arms, and boom, he'll get off and get up the field. So, yeah, he's more than a two-down player.
Dan, it sounds like you're very pleased with the Giants draft. We didn't get to the third-round pick, Davis Webb, yet. Now, he's a future pick, as you know. They don't expect him to play for at least a couple of more years, even at the outset. But it sounds like you're pretty happy with their first several picks.
No, I am. Well, like I said, Tomlinson was one of my favorite guys. I could talk about him all day. I mean, I when you're studying tape, and all of a sudden, you know, people stick out at you. You're not, say, looking at any one guy, but, you know, here's 54. There's 54. There's 54. You know, I mean, you go,
right.
And all of a sudden think, well, hey, nobody's talking about this guy. What's going on? And I don't care, because that's the way I like to write him up, those guys that can play. So, but then you go to Davis Webb, and I really think that was an excellent developmental quarterback pick. He is big. He's angular. He's got as strong an arm as anybody in this draft. And I do that by the radar gun. Obviously, what happens at the NFL Combine, and a lot of these guys, we get to see in person, so we can really see him spin it.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, he's a big guy. He can throw that ball. I mean, his finished throw was like 56, 55 miles an hour. And that's what Mahomes is. Everybody's talking about Mahomes' great arm strength and all that. But, hey, Webb did the exact same thing on those outcuts that they gun you at the combine. And the only thing Mahomes did is when he released the ball, it was like 60 miles an hour, 58 miles an hour, somewhere in there. Whereas what I want to see is how the ball finishes that receiver on an 18-yard out. And that's what Webb did, 56, 57, or 56, 55 miles an hour, which is really humming. So, smart kid, dad, a former coach. You love that. He knows what it takes to succeed on the football field. He works hard. He'll study extra, and it's great for him to be behind Eli Manning and to learn from him. You know, I mean, that's a great thing. A lot of young quarterbacks don't get that opportunity, and so I would expect, he is going to. I'll be actually looking forward to seeing him in the preseason too.
Mm-hmm.
So. See how he the reps he gets, and see how he shows up, because he is a big. I mean, hey, I'll guarantee you, you don't have to worry about him. Studying the playbook and all that stuff, he'll get it done.
What's the toughest thing that he's going to have to accomplish or learn in the next two or three seasons, Dan, to be ready to potentially, let's say, replace Eli Manning in the 2019 or 2020 season?
Obviously taking the snaps under center, learning you know, the terminology, the West Coast offense, and as you guys know, it's, I mean, it's legendary. It's three sentences long, and I used to watch film with John, you know, I used to watch film with John Gruden at Philadelphia when we'd come in for draft meetings and everything, and I'd go, John, why do you got to call the, you know, the play, you know, so long? I said, that's same. Hey, when I coached, we called that Pro 98, or we call that Pro 96. You know what I mean? And because the backs knew where they had to go, and then you do a hang pattern on the back. And he says, "Nah, we got to call it like this because of this and this and this." And they hit on it, man. So
yeah, but Dan,
anyway,
that's why the menu card is so big on the sideline.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I'll tell you what. One thing's funny though, too. You go ask John Gruden to call somebody else's offense. He isn't going to call it as quick as he does at West Coast because that's all John ever did is study that West Coast offense inside out. So he knows that really, really well. But, you know, you change gears and go to a different one, and it's not so quick. So, but anyway, you know, I think that that's – and then taking snap under center, dropping to your set point when you're throwing, you know, stepping and throwing through because he has been, you know, a shotgun quarterback all the time. And I think that you're studying the defenses when you're dropping back. You're looking, you know, a lot of times in that air raid or the bear raid where he was called from Cal, you know, they're looking one part of the field.
Sure.
And then if it's not there, then they'll check down, you know. Well, now he's got to scan the field as he drops back. And here's the other thing. A lot of people don't, you know, is he going to be a crossover guy when he drops back or is he going to just drop straight back from the center?
Don't know.
And backpedal. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's all those things he's got to learn. But you know what? He'll work on he'll whatever way he it you know it works best for him, he'll work on it.
You know, Dan, the one thing I want to follow up on Webb real quick, I guess there's really no way to know because like you said in that air raid offense, your decision of where you're throwing the football is often made pre-snap. So once the ball's in your hand, you're really not reading a whole lot. And to me, in a lot of ways, that's almost the toughest part of being an NFL quarterback is once you have the ball, are you able to see what's happening because it's going so quickly, convert that information in your mind to make a good decision. And is that really something that you can know if Webb can eventually do that based on his college tape? Is that purely a projection? Or did you see some stuff from him in college that would make you think he can figure that out?
Well, no, there's a lot of projection. Obviously, with you know, you get that pre-snap read, but then – in the NFL, that's old news. Really fast, you know, the way they rotate out of there. You go, oh, geez, I thought, nope, whoops, interception, you know. So, no, it takes time and a lot of film study and to see what, because, you know, every defensive coordinator is different in how they do things. Mm-hmm. So, no, he's going to have to learn all that. But you know what? He's a real smart guy. And like I said, his dad's a coach. And I'm sure that, you know, he's going to be drilling and to get better. I like Davis Webb a lot, and him and Peterman are my two guys. Peterman from Pitt that you know I thought would be a couple guys that could really advance in the NFL as they get along.
Dan, I'm going to ask you about the final two picks because we talked about Gallman a little bit earlier in your conversation. You've got Bisnovati graded as a fourth or fifth rounder, and the Giants, of course, traded up to get him in the sixth, which I'm sure you're going to say was really good value. I'm interested in how you think he fits and how he will compete for a job on the depth chart. And then, obviously, Moss, who I believe you had a sixth or seventh grade round grade on.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Adam from Pittsburgh, Biswana, I tell you, he's got all the, you know, he's got the length, the long arms and all that. And, you know, I don't know where Mike Solari is going to play him. Mike's going to kick him inside or, you know, if he's going to give him reps at tackle first, you know, out there. But I personally think that Adam might be a guard, be a little more short area guy. But, I mean, he's a tough, tough kid. He's got, like I said, all the measurables. He's got to work on, you know, his footwork and everything. But like I said, I think I've told you guys before or visited with you about it that I think Mike Solari is one of the great teachers in the offensive line in the National Football League. And he'll work with Adam, and Adam's going to have that. It'll be like clockwork after a while. And I thought that was really a steal getting him there because I had him down, you know. Actually, he was one of our top three, you know, seniors coming in this draft, and I think he struggled with that speed on the outside, which bothered me a little bit, but a lot of that's technique too, you know, so, and he played in the pro-style offense, So that will help him. At least he was down a 3-point stance, where a lot of those guys aren't. So,
that's true.
I think he's going to be a really good developmental guy because he's got the measurables that, like, if he had short arms or he had a real small hand where he can't, he's got vice grips now. He's got good hand strength. But he's just got to upgrade his technique and things, which I'm very confident that he will because I know he's going to be coaching him.
You know, Dan, I want to follow up on Avery Moss real quick because I've talked to a couple people around the league that looked at him a lot in college, and they all told me they think he's a really good fit for Steve Spagnuolo because he's a bigger end that can play outside and run situations, and then he can kick inside to that three technique and rush the passer a little bit. He doesn't have that dynamic first step off the edge, but he kind of has, and I'm not comparing him to Justin Tuck because Tuck's obviously a much more talented player, but he has that versatility to play outside and inside, and Spags can kind of move him around a little bit. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, he does. In fact, I watched him a lot when he was at Youngstown, and I studied the Missouri Valley Conference really, really closely. And, of course, they had a pair of them there. You know, Rivers was on the other side. And, I mean, they had a pair of really good defensive ends out there. And but Moss is, like you say, he is a bigger guy, so he's a little bit more versatile, and he can move around. And we also had him in the East-West down in St. Pete this year. And was really a strong player during the week and learned a lot, accepted coaching. And, he might end up being like a base, you know, to help stop the run game as opposed to saying being a pass rusher, but or help, you know, like you said, kick inside a little bit in a rotation type thing. So I think that, that Moss was a very good value there, as was Bisnawe. So, for the value, and then like the Flasher, you know, and Dahlman, I think those are good. And of course, like I said, one of my favorite players in Tomlinson.
Dan, finally, I want to follow up and just ask you about the NFC East because I thought all three NFC East teams really found answers for areas of need over the course of the draft. The Dallas got their defense figured out in the secondary. They got a pass rusher. The Eagles got one of the best pass rushers in the draft. They also added replacement for Darren Sproles, developmental receiver, and then the Redskins get Jonathan Allen along with a couple guys on defense in the secondary to help him.
And P. Ryan.
And P. Ryan, who I think is going to be their starting running back this year based on who's on the roster. What do you think, Dan, about those three NFC East teams and how they are helping themselves, not just for this year, but for the future?
No, I agree 100% with what you said. I mean, Dallas needed secondary people. They drafted four of them, you know. I mean, it was, they
were pretty good, too.
And, you know, Jerry wasn't always like that, you know. I think Jerry's just watching the draft down there now. They're letting other people make those picks, you know. So, Dallas did a nice job there, you know, getting Taco Charlton, who, again, is, more of a, in my mind, a base defensive end, not necessarily a big-time pass rusher, but a presence out there that helps stop the run. And, you know, he'll eventually work into being he's got to develop more moves. But they addressed a lot of needs. And then, like I said, two of my favorite players in this draft were at the Redskins drafted. And I'm not just saying this because they're both Alabama guys, you know, and Tomlinson is an Alabama guy and all that. But I like the way those guys played. I think, you know, one thing about Anderson, even he's number 22 for people that don't know for Alabama. Him and Tomlinson were basically overlooked on that great defense. You know, everybody's talking about Foster and Allen, and rightfully so.
And Tim Williams.
And they're secondary people. But I'll tell you what, Anderson is an outstanding passer. He's a better pass rusher than Williams, who ended up, you know, going to Baltimore. This guy brings it. And, he kind of reminds me of, you know, the old-time giant, like, outside linebackers, you know what I mean? Those guys, the 4-3 outside, he's big.
Yeah, Carl
like,
Banks.
You know, 6'2". Yep, that kind of guy, you know what I mean? And hey, speaking of underrated, Banks is underrated for a long time, too.
He was.
Except for the Giant fans, he wasn't. But anyway, so... here's Anderson, who that kind of guy. He'll be in their pass rush rotation. Of course, loved Allen. And then they got an excellent corner in Moreau, who tore a pec muscle when he's bench pressing for crying out loud during his pro day. But you know, he's a first round talent that they got in the third round. So, but anyway, no, I thought they had a very good draft. Like I said, I thought Dallas did a lot of good things. Eagles, they hit the people that they needed. Like you said, P. Ryan is a big back. about 230 pounds and can run, you know, he runs like 4.6, but, you know, he's a hammer. He's that guy that, you know, you were talking about the Giants might look at, you know, somewhere that get a big guy in there. And then, of course, Barnett is, hey, he's a blue-collar. He's not a quick twitch guy, but what he is a relentless, he just kind of wears you out kind of guy, you know. So, but, no, I thought the division there, they, you know, they filled needs and they, I think, all upgraded in my mind. Certainly Washington with their, you know, with those defensive guys that they needed bad.
Now, one more from me, Dan, before we let you go. I believe that Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo talked the other day about a couple of undrafted rookie free agents that they're bringing in. Two offensive linemen, Jessamyn Dunker out of Tennessee State, projecting as a guard, and then obviously there's Chad Wheeler out of USC.
Southern Cal.
Right. And so what can you tell us about their value? Are these guys legitimate threats to fight for a job?
Yes. I'll tell you what. Wheeler, he was nicked up. Now, he's a four-year starter at Southern Cal. I mean, he played left tackle and everything. And I'll tell you, he's got the talent. And, you know, what he's got to do is just he can't have technique breakdowns. Now, I really liked him. I gave him a draftable grade. And actually, going into the fall again, he was one of those guys that we really liked as a senior coming into the season and everything. And he just kind of stayed stagnant a little bit. He didn't really elevate his game. He kind of stayed the same. But he's a very talented guy. I mean, anybody can play left tackle at Southern Cal for 4 years. I mean, he's, you know, I mean, hey, they see a lot of speed rushers out there, you know, in the Pac-12. So he the biggest thing about him, how bad do you want it? I mean, because he's got the talent. Now, if he wants to be, you know, an NFL player, he's going to make that 53. If he really is, if he's got the eye of the tiger, if he's hungry, he's going to make the team because he's got all the talent to do it. So, and then Dunker is a guy that, again, he's raw, okay, but he's got talent. In fact, you know, when he was playing in like the Senior Bowl, he was better. Believe me, he was a better player than a couple of those guys like Davenport who got drafted. And let's see, at Morgan that got drafted. You know, he's a better talent in my mind than those two, because I don't think those other two guys are going to be tough enough to handle it in the NFL, where I think Dunker can. I mean, he's kind of got a little mean streak to him and everything. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, I don't want to overemphasize this, and I don't want to put pressure on Mike. Right? Like, yeah, I work with Mike Solari at Kansas City, and I followed him at, you know, San Francisco and watched him because his offensive line. He's going to make these guys play either that or not going to be around because they've got the talent. And if they listen to Mike and his coaching, that offensive line is going to take a step forward, and those two free agents are going to be making the ball club.
Dan, we appreciate the time. Thank you awesome. So much for your help over the course of this draft process. Awesome stuff. And we'll talk to you as we get closer to the season and preview the year, okay?
Thank you, Dan.
You betcha, guys. Great being with you. Thanks a million.
Dan Shonka does a great job, OurLads.com. Of course, he also did cover the draft for TuneIn Radio during the NFL draft. He was doing that for the NFL. So that's why we didn't have him on our normal Friday night spot that we usually have him. He was getting other work elsewhere.
Remember, he was with the Eagles for, I think, 7 years as a scout at one time. So he was kind of going back to some of his old school roots and I'm sure had a bunch of pretzels and cheesesteaks and all that fun stuff between breaks during the draft. But what I love about Dan, and obviously, John, this is because I'm an old school guy and I will always have that old school slant. Dan is more a guy who's going to be impressed with what you put on tape as opposed to somebody who just, you know, flashes big numbers at the combine. He's going to be more of prove it to me on the field. Show me your skill set on the field. Don't show it to me in your underwear Olympics. And that to me, that's the way I lean. So that's why I appreciate him so much.
Let's do the phone calls at 201-939-4513. Dash in Ohio. He's been on since the start of the show. What's up, Dash?
How are we doing, John? What's going on, bro?
Hi. What's on your mind, brother?
Everything's on my mind. I've been listening and over the weekend and everything, and then it's Davis West here that sounded better and better to me every time I listen to you. He's sounding better and better. He's sounding like a great quarterback that we picked up. Now, my question is looking into the future, looking at the two quarterbacks I want to mention it and talk about Eli as far as the Peyton Manning and Brett Favre situation and looking into Peyton being released by the Colts after his next surgery and Brett Favre being traded for Aaron Rodgers trying to start. So I'm still can, and I remember talking to Paul over the weekend about Eli only having a 3-year contract left, and they wanted to put Davis West, but then a 3-year experiment with him for the next 3 years. So is there any way, the possibility of letting Eli walk after a 3-year contract if he still want to play? And I'm just asking, will Eli finish in a big blue uniform?
You know, there's really no way to predict that. It's just really hard to say. I mean, Eli could play great football for the next 3 seasons, then you wouldn't even consider it. Eli could get hurt next year, and then maybe you have that conversation if he can't bounce back. I think it's a very, very hard prediction to make at this point in time, yeah, because no one would have predicted Peyton Manning would have been off the Colts 2 years before it happened. That neck surgery kind of came out of nowhere. So, you know, to me, it's just a really hard thing to predict, which is why you want to have somebody there just in case something does happen.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a good dilemma to have. I'm not saying it's a problem. I think it's a good dilemma to have Eli, the 3-year contract, as far as you sign him and have David Weston in the wing. I know it's a good dilemma to be in, but I'm just saying, is there any possibility or chance? I know we can't predict it now or anything as far as Eli not being. I would love Eli to retire as a Giant.
I'm going to make it simple
ever,
for you.
I'm just saying, is there any possibility or any way that Jerry won't resign him if he still wanted to play after 3 years?
I'm going to make it simple.
I know he can't predict anything like that.
I'm going to give you a better parallel.
I'm
going to give you a better parallel. First of all, I think that John Mara and this organization feels about Eli what his father Wellington and the organization felt about Phil Sims. When Phil Sims wound up tearing his rotator cuff during the 93 season, and then in the offseason, he had to have rotator cuff surgery. And George Young looked him in the eye and said, look, rotator cuff surgery, we don't know if you could still throw the ball. And we certainly don't know if you're going to be able to throw the ball this season. They had to cut Phil Sims because they just could not be sure if Phil was going to be able to be Phil Sims again. When with the salary cap involved, it made it impossible. I will tell you this. Had Phil Sims not injured his rotator cuff in the middle of the 93 season against the Arizona Cardinals, and I was here that day in the horrible wind that he was throwing against, and when it happened, I'll never forget it. I will tell you this is a fact. Phil Sims was going to still come back in 1994 and be the Giants' starting quarterback. That's a fact. He was coming back. And when he got hurt, that derailed everything, and it turned out to be the end of his career.
Thank you, Dash. We appreciate the call, my friend.
And we don't know if Eli's going to get hurt. We just don't know.
We just don't
Hopefully
know.
He won't. But it could happen, and all bets are off.
Was the Sims injury a contact injury or a non-contact injury?
No, Phil, it was horrible windy conditions that day against Arizona. In fact, the Giants won on a last-second field goal.
Matt Barr still that year or no?
No, it would have been Del Wiso.
Okay.
And the problem was, it just required all kinds of torque to be thrown into that wind.
So he basically threw out a shoulder.
Yes.
So there wasn't a contact deal.
No.
He literally threw out a shoulder.
Not that I know of.
I was just curious. Could you tell what play it happened on? Was it,
no,
like, visible?
No, but we could tell after the game.
Okay.
We could tell after the game Phil couldn't raise his arm above his shoulder.
I mean, it could have been something that kind of festered during the year, too.
It could have started and then actually became
had, like,
so much
really
of a problem.
Had like a small tear and then it became a bigger tear.
Could have
the
been.
Final game,
I don't know the answer to
I'm
that.
I'm just curious. I didn't know.
I do know that Arizona game, though, was the breaking point for him. And from that point forward, the rest of the season, Phil played the rest of the year, but he didn't have the same zip on the throws. He wasn't making as many long throws. He looked like Chad Pennington. Okay? His whole repertoire of passes changed from that point on. And to the Giants' credit and to Phil's credit, they never said anything about it till after the season.
And that was the 93 season,
yes,
right?
Yeah. They didn't want to give anything away.
Yeah, because that was the year
they
were right
team.
In the mix with Dallas. That was the same year as the Emmitt Smith separated shoulder game, right?
Correct.
At the end of the year.
Correct.
Right.
And the Giants wound up going into the wild card game, and they got crushed by San Francisco after that horrible, horrible Ricky Waters 5 touchdowns. I'll never forget it. Phil's last game, LT's last game. But the point is simple in reference to your question. I certainly believe that the Giants want Eli to play his whole career here. I don't think they ever expect him to wear another uniform.
Correct.
That's the anticipation. But you just can't say when that end is going to come because Phil certainly thought he was going to play longer, and so did they.
I'm sure the Packers would have said that about Brett Favre.
I'm sure
the Colts would have said that about Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Browns would have said that about Bernie Kosar if you want to go back to their franchise quarterback.
Go back to Joe Namath. You ever think Joe Namath was not going to be a Jet?
How about Joe Montana and the
Joe
49ers?
Montana. Absolutely.
You just don't know what's going to happen at the end of these. I mean, and if Tony Romo didn't choose to retire, what happened with him, too? He would have went to play for somebody else
exactly.
this year.
Exactly. So
Warren Moon, another guy.
Well, he wound up with like 5 teams, you know. But I guess what I'm saying to you is, yeah, the intention would be a career giant like Sims and like Strahan turned out to be, and LT and Harry Carson all turned out to be. Carl Banks wasn't a lifetime giant. I mean,
neither was Bavar, right?
No, no. He played for Philly and Cleveland.
Right.
I mean, heck, Banks played for the Redskins, guys. I know you younger folks may not remember that. He was with the Redskins.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens. Anyway.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Steven in the Bronx. He's been holding the longest. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Doing great, Steven. What's up?
Hey, just wanted you guys to know, thank you for keeping football going while the offseason's, you know, killing us right now.
Paul Dottino, football always is going, man. You don't got to worry about him.
Oh, I can't wait till training camp. I told Lance yesterday, to heck with the summer. Let's get right to the end of July right now. Go.
So, guys, I'll be really quick. I initially wanted Reuben Foster to get drafted by us. I thought that, yeah, he has off-the-field issues, but Landon Collins could have probably took him in under his wing, guided him to be a well-rounded professional. But, hey, I believe in Jerry Reese. I like what he's doing. We got a couple guys that are coming in. Darian Thompson's coming back. B.J. Goodson got a year under his belt experience. He's going to be pretty good. What are the next holes we have to fill?
Well, here's the thing, too. Remember, Reuben Foster and Paul, I was going to say this anyway, but Paul's showing me the article now that Reuben Foster had a big-time injury concern as well coming out of college, where, you know, he had shoulder surgery a couple times, and for a linebacker that likes to thump, that's a real big problem. One of the reasons he dropped in the draft, and Adam Schefter had this report, I guess this was yesterday afternoon he had the report.
Yeah.
It looks like. And that his shoulder condition worried teams because the surgery on his right rotator cuff, quote unquote, didn't take. And that was the quote from one of the team sources. And that's why he drafted, because they thought he might need additional surgery down the line. Now, that's an anonymous source. That might be a team trying to cover their own butt, leaking that out there. Who
Don't
knows?
Know.
But besides the off-the-field stuff, there was a significant physical red flag with Reuben Foster as well.
Got you. And I just have one more thing.
Yes.
I know that we drafted Dalvin Thompson round two, and his comparisons to Hankins were very similar. But I think that's going to be the steal of the draft, because this kid, I watch him play. Every play, he's just jumping to, you know, hit that football, you know, if it's a passing play, or he's always just there. Like, I was watching his tape, and I was – listen to his interviews. He's very professional. Like, this is a giant guy.
Yeah.
And people need to understand, this is a blue-collar team. You know, you don't hear a lot of Giants players having off-the-field issues other than the Miami incident. But, I mean, that's nothing minor. That's minor. But I think we're going to be fine, guys. I can't wait.
I agree. Thanks for the call, Stephen. We appreciate it. Look, Tomlinson, he's not going to be a guy either that – you know, he's going to be flying around like OC, you know, stripping quarterback left and right and getting a billion sacks. But he is going to do all the dirty work.
Well,
he's going to be a team guy. Again, you put him in for Hankins, and that Giants defensive line stopping the run, I haven't gone through all the rosters, but I will take them in a second over just about any other defensive line in the league. That's how good they'll be against the run.
You know, be careful, though, when you call him a steal of the draft, because he was a second-round pick. I think any first or second-round pick, you not only
–
Yeah, you expect a lot from a first and second round pick. In fact, you expect a pretty healthy amount of production from your third rounder, too, if you can get it right away. To me, when you start talking about steals, it's more 4, 5, 6, and 7.
It's day three.
Yeah, day three are steals. That's a good point, John. That's what it comes down to. You can maybe say if a third round pick like Davis Webb turns out to be a franchise quarterback, you know, certainly that would be a steal. If he's a franchise quarterback,
I'll buy
three.
That. Sure,
but those are unique circumstances. I think for the most part, day three guys who turn out to be star players, those are your steals.
201-939-4513. Shakes. I know you called last week. I missed you, but now I got you. Shakes, what's going on, pal?
I'm all right, man. How you doing?
So, what'd you think
hey,
of the
Shakes.
Draft? What was your take, man?
Oh well, yeah, you didn't hear me Monday, but I did not like this draft at all.
Why, man? Dude, you
all.
Wanted an offensive weapon. You
not
got it. You got your offensive weapon. Isn't that what you wanted?
I like The only draft pick I like is the fourth round running back, Wayne Gallman.
That's you know, Shakes, after listening to Dan Shanka, it's hard not to be thrilled with Tomlinson because he just gloated over him like he was his firstborn.
Yeah, I heard it. I heard it. The only thing, I have reservations about it because of the two ACL injuries.
In the past,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, Shakes, that's the thing. Yeah, those surgeries happened 4 years ago, and he hasn't missed a game. Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem. Okay, so I got three things, and I'm going to try to make it as fast as possible.
You got time. Go ahead.
All right. So, number one. Now, I heard yesterday's episode, and the last caller had called me out and a few other people that was down on the draft.
Okay.
He did.
Now, who was that?
I don't remember the caller, but he got on them. He got on Shakes.
Yeah, I don't remember his name either, and I don't even want to put credence to his name. I'm glad you know my name, and you got my name all in your mouth. But here's the thing. When you a fan, because he sits there and says, oh, you're a fan, you're supposed to just like it. Look,
that's not
when
true.
When you're a fan and you care, mm-hmm. you're not going to sit there and just say, okay, I'm just going to go along with whatever they do. No, you're going to say what pleases you as a fan.
Yeah, the fun part of being a fan is having your own opinion and arguing about stuff. That's fun. You're right. I agree with you, Shakes. That's fair.
Shakes, for what it's worth, I thought the caller was a bit tongue-in-cheek. I know he got on you. I didn't think it was quite as serious as you did. I thought he was a little bit being satirical, to be honest. I didn't take it as straightforward as you did.
What's your
second
point?
But I understand your point.
What's your second point, Shakes?
Yeah. Okay, number two. Now, I just said that I don't like none of this, any of this draft besides Wayne Gallman. And, John, I'll explain more of that later. Maybe tomorrow, if you on tomorrow?
I'm on tomorrow with Jeff Eagles. You get more than happy to call back.
Okay, I will. I'll let you know exactly why I don't like this draft.
Sure.
But right now, I'm going to go on why I don't like Davis Webb.
Okay.
I don't like the Davis Webb pick.
Why is that?
And there's three reasons why I don't like the Davis Webb pick. Three reasons.
Threefold.
First off, to use that draft pick, you could have traded up and possibly got O.J. Howard. Now, everybody wants to say that the third round is so valuable and you can't give it away to trade up, Shakes. You just can't do it and all that other stuff, right? But then you sit there and you draft a quarterback that more likely won't play for another 4 years. Now, to say that, if you go into the third round and drafted an immediate impact player, like my choice was going to get a guard. I wanted a guard. A guard could have improved the offensive line. I wanted Asiata from Arkansas.
And I think Asiata is a good plug-and-play type of power run game player. I think Paul and I are both on the same page with you on that.
Viable player.
Yes.
Yes. So, to me, it's like you drafted and you value this guy that won't play for another 4 years over a guy that you can plug and play right now and have an immediate impact on your team right now.
Shakes.
I can't get with that. That is so asinine.
Shakes, I hear you. I hear you, but I will make a counter-argument, and here's my counter-argument.
Okay.
What team do you think would have been willing to trade down from their selection in the first round for a third-round pick?
They do it all the time.
No, I know, but they Shakes, no, Shakes, I hear you. But the way this draft shook out, no pun intended, so many offensive players went in that top 12 that, in my opinion, didn't deserve to go in the top 12. You had three wide receivers and three quarterbacks. You had, to me, top 12 defensive talents in this draft going Derek Barnett at 14. I thought he was great value. I thought Malik Hooker at 15 was awesome value. I thought Jonathan Allen at 17 was awesome value.
That could be huge.
Right. So to me, Shakes, you look at those three teams, and I'll cover the rest in a second. Those were three of the four teams that were picking ahead of the O.J. Howard selection, right?
Mm-hmm.
To me, if I'm one of those teams and the Giants call up, I'm going to say, I don't care what you offer me.
I'm picking.
I got Derek Barnett, Malik Hooker, and Jonathan Allen there. I'm taking the player. So I'm going to take those teams out of the mix for a second, okay? Then you're down. I think the only team you can make the viable argument for are the Titans at 18. They're the only team to me, eight picks in front of the Giants, that might have been willing to trade down.
Then again, they might have loved the Dory Jackson so much they didn't want to. The Bucks would never have traded down. They've been doing cartwheels for 2 weeks over O.J. Howard. So
they weren't
going to move. So really, in my opinion, realistically, Shakes, the only team that you could have moved up with to get O.J. Howard were the Titans at 18. And I'm not sure a third-round pick would have been enough for that, to be honest with you.
Okay. And that's your opinion.
Yep.
I respect it. And I do think that it was Tennessee that we could have did and made a deal with. And when you go back into the history, just a little history thing, didn't we trade with Tennessee to get Jeremy Shockey?
Paul, can you help me out with the history?
The Giants moved up with Tennessee because they thought that Cleveland was going to take Shockey. So they jumped up. In fact, they knew Cleveland was going to take Shockey, to be honest with you. They had some intel on that. And they jumped ahead of them to get Shockey.
Isn't that ironic? So I totally agree that it was Tennessee that could have, you know, that was a team that maybe possibly could have done a move with us. And it would have been like, reminiscent of Jeremy Shockey. Now we got O.J. Howard. That would have been beautiful. But my last thing, why I don't like this draft of Davis Webb is because if you're sitting there and you're saying that this is Eli's successor, if you're sitting there and saying that after Eli hangs it up, this is your guy, you don't wait until the third round to draft a successor. You don't wait until the third round to draft a franchise quarterback. You don't do that. You don't do that. When you get into to the point where you need a franchise quarterback, usually it's in the first round. Now, you have some anomalies that you can find somebody like the Prescott's last year in the fourth round and all that good stuff, but that's not the norm.
Second round works too, though, Shakes. For example, Drew Brees was almost a second round pick. He was very end of the first round. Andy Dalton was a second round pick, for example. Look, in general, you're right. You're not going to find your franchise quarterback generally on day three of the draft or late on day two. You're right. It doesn't happen that often. Mm-hmm. But here's why I think Davis, I'm not going to call him an exception to the rule, but to me, he's an extremely high-risk, high-reward type of player. You know, he's coming from a system in college where he didn't do 50 to 70% of the things he's going to have to do in the NFL to be a successful quarterback, right? He has all the physical tools to do it. No one's arguing that watching him play. So the reason he dropped to the third round isn't because of a low ceiling. You know what I mean? The reason he dropped to the third round is because of a low floor. I mean, Davis Webb is a third-round pick. If he doesn't figure out how to read defense and do the things a pro system requires you to do. And by the way, there's a chance of that happening. It's not impossible. That could be the case. The pick could be a zero and give you absolutely nothing. There's a chance of that happening. And that's why, to me, Webb dropped to the third round. Not that he didn't have the physical ability to be a franchise quarterback, but it's because there is a percent chance, because of how he played in college and the system he played in, that he could never figure out how to be a pro quarterback. And that's why he was a third-round style pick rather than the first-round pick you're talking about.
Shakes, if you want to break that down in a different way, it's not about what he can't do. It's about what you know he can do.
And what he hasn't done before, too.
It's about an unknown.
Correct.
As opposed to some players where you look at them and they say, look, this guy's got flaws in his game. He's got warts in his game. We know that's broken. We know that's got to be fixed. That's not the deal with Davis Webb. With Davis Webb, he's got a lot of good things, and then he's got these unknowns that nobody really knows about.
Correct.
Okay. Those are the three things that I hate about the pick. I hear y'all. I don't agree.
Shakes, I'm going to give you one more. Hold on a second. I'm going to give you one more reason, and I said this on the show yesterday. Maybe you didn't catch it. The third-round pick is a bonus because Darian Thompson is this year's third-round pick. He was on injured reserve last year.
Because
he's a bonus player. He didn't play.
Hey, look, and Shakes, I'll say this. I think your points, they make sense.
He's not off the wall.
They're grounded in reality, and your points could end up being true. We're just giving you the counter argument. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense, and it's all good.
No, it's all great. It's all great. I know, and, you know, it's my choice to agree or disagree.
Of course.
That's fine.
I don't agree with a lot. But, you know, those are the reasons why I hate that pick. And my last point, And P Dot, you really gonna like this. We like the old school. We like the 80s mm-hmm. Giants. We both in consensus on that.
Yes.
We like that physical football, hard nose. I can't stand that powder puff football that they say the league is going into now. But the fullback, y'all know that I want the fullback back. I called up on the show to express how much I want the fullback back into this Giants offense and in this game. And they got an undrafted guy, Shane Smith, from San Jose State, that did 36 reps at his pro day. 36! 36! Are you kidding me? Oh, he got to make the team. He had to. Did y'all see the picture of this guy? Did any of you see the picture of this guy? Anybody?
I have.
I did not.
Yeah, I have.
Oh, my
He reminds me, in a way, Madison Hedgecock.
And Shakes, I want to add one thing to that, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not that familiar with the guy you're talking about. I will do my work on him once the Giants announce who their undrafted free agent guys are. I'll do work on that over the mm-hmm. weekend.
But mm-hmm.
if you're listening to our spot with Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus earlier in the week, he made the point that Rhett Ellison actually was more effective lining up as a fullback than as a tight end. So he thinks Ellison could actually be a really good fullback filler for the Giants this year, and he thinks that would be a great way for them to use him. So I figured that'd be something you would want to hear too.
You should, Shakes. He was the blocker for Peterson when he ran for 2000. Remember that.
I like the Ellison thing. I like the Ellison signing, and how I feel about how they should use him is exactly how they used Bear Pascoe a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to use Ellison just like Bear Pascoe. That's what I want. Lining up as H-back, fullback, he goes out and you can put him at tight end and he can block. That's what I want them to do with Ellison. I want them to use him just like Bear Pascoe.
All right, Shakes, we got to run, pal.
All right.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Call
in tomorrow. I want to talk to you about Ingram, all right? 201-939-4513. That was a marathon, Shakes, call right there.
You know,
he made fair points.
He was very methodical. He wasn't overly emotional, and I understand what he's saying. There's logic in his arguments. These things we're gonna have to wait and see.
Correct. And like I said, Davis Webb is a high risk, high reward pick. He just is. It could be great, or it could be a zero, mm-hmm. or it could be somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's a third round pick, because of the risk, not because of the level of the potential reward.
Just remember, the Giants drafted Jeff Hostetler out of West Virginia, and he was their third-string quarterback behind Sims and Rutledge for several years. And then what happened? They needed him to help them win playoff games and to win the Super Bowl against the Bills. And he went on to have a terrific career with the Redskins and the Raiders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we'll see if lightning strikes twice.
All right, I want to get the two guys in that have been holding. Nick in the Meadowlands. We'll go a little past one today. Nick, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, fellas, how you been?
Doing great. What's up, Nick? Sorry about the wait, man.
Yeah, Saturday I kept getting cut off, so I said, you know what, I'm going to wait. But it's been giving me a little bit of ammo. So
fire away.
Like your Darian Thompson point there, I hope you're absolutely right there, Paul, because I love this kid. He's going to change things, and it's going to make us that much better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another pick for us. Like you said, it's like an extra. I think we got three good guys here that'll do something for us. I don't know what people are looking at, but Tomlinson is a beast. He's a beast. I mean, forget about injuries freaking a lifetime ago. Other than that, Evan Ingram, he's going to change things up. I like your Jermichael Finley comparison, Paul.
Okay.
And Jordan Reed. I mean, the guy is going to be a mismatch problem. And I think the running back, Goldman, I think if you watch this kid, he punches the ball in. He gets a lot of touchdowns. Other than that, I don't know where some of these callers are from, but let me tell you about fans around here. It's like they want every single pick, and you're not going to get it, okay? Let's have reality going to check here. Jerry Reese has done very good. I hear these same guys in the area. I live in the Meadowlands, guys, at work, everywhere. Who's Eli Apple? Who's Landon Collins? I can't believe they traded up. Well, those two, I should say something alone right there. Landon Collins, what happened? Thank you. Eli Apple, I think you're too. You're going to see the same thing. I mean, I could
but
go
you
on
know
and
what?
On.
But
I
you
think
know
he's
what?
Done a lot better in this end of his tenure there in the Giants. But give the guy a break. The other thing is, I'm sick of hearing about the offensive line. It is what it is, fellas. You went out there in free agency. What do you want, a 35-year-old guy you're going to pay $33 million? Or are you going to pick up guys that ain't as good? Let me tell you what about the Giants scouts. They're good. They're good. Okay, so just look at the players we've picked up in the past. Give it a little time. Whenever we drafted Eric Flowers, he was supposed to be a right tackle, moved to the left side probably this year. But what happened, happened. The kid's 23.
Mm-hmm.
He just turned 23. Give the guy a chance. You got Fluker. You got Ellison. That's your fullback, what the other caller was talking about. There's your fullback right there. I mean, be optimistic a little bit, guys. Let's celebrate a little bit of what we have now instead of what we could have that isn't there. So let's see what happens, guys. I think we're in good hands. We'll be all right. Quarterback-wise, hey, you got a guy that can be in there in case anything happens. But that's not going to happen. He could sit back like you guys were saying. He's got the size. He's got the arm strength. And Jerry Reese doesn't really visit quarterbacks very often. I kind of had a feeling they were going to take this kid when I was reading about that, that he was watching this kid down there at Cal. I just had that feeling.
Don't be too hard on your friends, because I want to leave you with this thought, okay? If the Giants had 20 picks over the weekend, there would still be fans who would be unsatisfied.
You're not going to hit on all of them.
Because that's the nature of the draft, and that's the nature of fans, okay?
It's
you
fun.
Never have enough picks, yeah. And you never pick the right players. It just that's the way it is.
I know. It's reality. I mean, it is what it is. What were you going to do?
You know,
I'm not gonna go
but fans in every city feel
were,
that way.
They were there. Ramczyk and these guys. I'm just, Evan Engram, you know. I like that pick. I like what they did. And I like Tomlinson. That fills a need, and he's going to be good. He's going to be good.
Thank you, Nick.
He's not a big, fat jelly roll, you know what I mean? He's a muscular guy that looks like he can see some damage.
Thank you, Nick. We got to run, pal.
All right, man. Be optimistic, fellas.
Yeah, appreciate it. And
he's not a jelly roll. I'm sorry.
And I do think that there is a happy medium between some of the overly pessimistic fans out there and being, you know, blindly thinking you're going to win the Super Bowl every year. I do think there's a happy medium. There are some concerns on the team. You worry about them. But at the same time, and I haven't said this in years past, folks. I really haven't. I think the Giants have more balance on both sides of the ball than maybe any other team in the conference. Not even talking about just the division.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that translates, we'll find out. It didn't translate offensively last year. We'll see if it does this season.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if the defense can play as well as it did last year. You never know from year to year. Things change, and things are different. I mean, look at the offense from 2 years ago as opposed to last year. Things change when you don't expect them to. So those are some things just to keep an eye on and just something to consider as you head into 2017. Richie in Long Island will wrap us up. Hey, Richie.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you again.
Good to hear from you, pal. What's on your mind?
Not much. I just want to say thank you for your draft coverage. You know, I haven't called in a couple of weeks, but I've really enjoyed listening to the shows.
You're welcome.
And,
thank you
coverage.
For listening.
I was thinking, I didn't have any way of finding this out, but has Jerry Reese, since he's been a general manager, has he ever traded back? I know he's traded up, but I don't know if he's traded back.
As far as I know, he has never traded down. Salmon, that's correct, right? Give me a thumbs up. The Giants have never traded. You don't know for sure.
Traded down. Hold on.
I do not believe he has ever.
I have a list of every one of Jerry Reese's trades. I keep this with me.
I do not believe he has ever traded down. Richie, I believe you are correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I just didn't know for sure.
Did.
And I guess while you guys looked that up.
He's definitely never traded down in the first round. That's for sure.
Yeah, that I know. But I don't know about the later rounds. It's kind of hard to keep track of every one of them. But my thing, just with that, like along that line, I get it. You know, I don't want to, you know, I would never say, trade a first round or a second round pick, because Jerry Reese has been known, at least, you know, the past 3, 4, or 5 years, to hit on first round draft picks, you know, second round draft picks, sometimes even third. But watching the draft this year, you know, and seeing what other teams were doing, you know, drafting, you know, trading third round picks, fourth round picks, things like that, fifth rounds, you know, I see, like, little moves like that, kind of gives you, like, a less margin of error or, like a better shot, like, in a crapshoot, you know, to better your odds or your chances when it comes to players getting injured. That's my thing with trading back. I get it sometimes, you know, you're going to trade, you know, you're risking the quality of the player when you trade back. You know, you might not get as high as one, but as we've seen, you know, in the past, you know, later round picks, fourth round, fifth round, maybe if we had a, you know, a couple more shots, you know, at the draft pool, we could have came out with something better.
The last time the Giants traded down, they went down in the first round a few spots and drafted Mathias Kiwanuka.
Okay.
That was an Ernie Accorsi trade. That was not a Jerry Reese trade. And that's why. Okay. That was
06, right?
Yeah, that's why a little bit of confusion on my part. That was an Ernie trade. Jerry was the director of college personnel at the time. When he took over for 2007, he did not make any trades back so far. He's also never traded in the first round, period.
Okay.
Up or down.
Yeah, that's my only counter. I mean, that's what I was thinking. I've been throwing that thought in my head for a little bit, you know. I get it. Like I said, there's quality of players. I wouldn't pass up an Odell Beckham for an extra draft pick. I wouldn't, you know, pass up a Weston Richburg for an extra draft pick. These are great players. But when it comes to maybe 4, 5, 6, and 7, you know, you can do a little bit of movement there. You know, we've seen, you know, the injury bug has seemed to play our later round draft picks at times. You know, Michael Thompson, Odigizua, you know, that's just a few I can name off the top of my head. But, yeah, that's all I had, guys.
Okay.
You know, I hope you guys have a good day, and I'll take my question and intro up there. Thanks.
Yeah, look, and that's fair, and that's a prevailing theory a lot of teams have with the draft. It's just a percentage game, which in a lot of ways it is. The more shots you take, the more chances you have of getting hits.
That is true. Bill Polian once said, the Hall of Fame front office guy, if you hit on a third of your draft picks and they become starters and bona fide really good players, you've done well.
And that's based off mathematics, looking at how teams have done.
Oh, yeah. He was in the game a long time.
Exactly. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Great job on the phones. Great job on the web at Giants Chat. We thank you for joining us. I'll be back here tomorrow with Jeff Fields. We'll have Charles Davis from the NFL Network as we continue to break down the Giant draft class and how they're going to contribute to the team in 2017. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmoe. Thanks again. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.